Good morning. We're calling this second meeting of the Division on Preventing Homelessness to order. We're meeting today pursuant to House Rule 10.01. The CLA will take the roll to determine which members are present.
Chair Gomez.
Present.
Vice Chair Keeler.
Present.
New Brindley.
Present.
Davids. Heinrich.
Present.
Hollins.
Present.
Hornstein.
Present.
Howard.
Present.
Cagle.
Present.
Petersburg.
Present.
Ryer.
Present.
We do have a quorum.
Thank you. Mr. Clerk, I believe that Representative Davids joined us just a few seconds late.
Davids present.
Thank you, Rep.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
May I have a motion to approve our minutes from January 13th, 2021?
I'll move to approve the minutes.
Representative Cagle moves approval of the minutes for January 13th, 2021. Is there any discussion on this item? Hearing none, those in favor, please unmute and say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for January 13th, 2021 are approved. Thank you so much. We actually, Representative Howard was on legislative business during the introduction of our first committee. And so we're just gonna go to him briefly to have him introduce himself, say what district he represents and share a little bit if there's anything that he'd like the committee to know about the way that homelessness shows up in his community. So Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize for, it's a little bit like missing the first day of school. So I apologize for missing the first part of our hearing. I'm incredibly grateful to be on this committee, this new committee, to put a spotlight on an issue that affects every community in the state. I represent Richfield and East Bloomington in the Minnesota House. And really homelessness brought me in our community was not something I thought a ton about until about 5 years ago when a large naturally occurring affordable housing project or complex in our district was purchased and over 2,000 of our community members in Richfield were displaced. Including over 150 students that were lost for our school district. And of those students, 38 of those students experienced homelessness as a result of being displaced when a private developer purchased this facility. And, you know, that was traumatic for our community and our we're still reeling from that in many ways. And this type of thing is happening in a lot of first-ring suburbs, and I hope in this committee to bring what's happening in our suburban communities related to homelessness and homelessness for our students to bear. And that trauma in our community just shows a spotlight about how housing security is linked to our gaps, our opportunity gaps in our schools. It's linked to economic security. You know, really all roads lead back to home. And I'm just so grateful to be part of this committee and do work to try to create a Minnesota where everyone has a place to call home. I think that's a goal that is realizable. It's a big goal, and I'm excited to be part of that work with this committee.
Thank you so much, Representative Howard. I think that that story like brought together a number of the things that we covered kind of in our introduction, so I really appreciate it. So today, as I mentioned last week, we're going to be hearing directly from people who have experienced homelessness or are currently experiencing homelessness. You know, many of us don't have the opportunity always to interact with folks from this community, and here we are. We're going to be making decisions that impact people's lives, and we really want to make sure that we create a space for their reflections and that we're, you know, we're not making assumptions about what it is that people need, and we're listening to them and responding. And I'm just going to pass it over to Vice Chair Keeler briefly, who's going to kind of make a couple of comments to ground us as we're moving through today's testimony. Representative Keeler.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to enter into this space. I think we're all here because we really care about people and we care about this work. I just want to enter into the space with all of you with an open heart and an open mind and know that it takes a lot of courage for our guests today to share a very personal part of their life. I know a lot of things are going on right now, but I would really love for us to be present in this moment because people are sharing things about their life that are very painful and are very real. And microaggressions happen. And when we have our screens off and we're doing multiple other things, we're not giving the energy and attention to the work that Minnesota needs to do right now. And so I just want to encourage all of us to be engaged in this moment as people share really personal parts of their life. And thank you to each and every one of you that are here to share. I know it takes a lot of courage and it takes a lot of, pride sometimes to come and share stories, but I can guarantee you that what you're going to share with us, we're all going to carry with us and hope that we can make a better Minnesota to serve all of our communities. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Keeler, for starting us off in a good way today. So we have a lot of public testifiers. We just are trying to get as many voices as we can into the space. So I'd ask everyone to keep your testimony to no more than 5 minutes so that we can make sure everybody has a chance to be heard. And I'll remind people as we go, but if you're testifying, please don't forget to state your name for the record at the beginning of your comments. We're gonna start off with Jace Rowe. Mr. Rowe, if you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, we really appreciate you joining us this morning.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for having me. My name is Jace Rowe, and I'm Northern Cheyenne. I'm a Minneapolis resident, and I work at Homeward Bound. It's a men's and women's shelter for Native Americans here in Minneapolis, and we have 50 beds, and I'm a case manager here. So, I, like I said, I'm from Minneapolis, and I'm honored to actually share a little bit of my story. My experience with homelessness was a few years ago. Today is actually my 8-year anniversary of being in recovery. So a lot can happen in 8 years, but that takes a lot of work, and it takes services available to people in order to get to places like this. And for myself, I can start out, I'm a two-spirit Native American male who has a history of use of heroin and daily meth use. I used for over 20 years, and I experienced homelessness, and I found in my journey, the struggles for me were finding culturally specific services that not only dealt with my trauma, but also finding services that were welcoming to queer people. So both those combined, it can be really hard to find services and to even feel safe in spaces created to help people who are experiencing homelessness. I'm 6'2" and I'm like 240 pounds, but I can still get scared in certain situations. And there's a lot of situations that's unsafe for Two Spirits and for the queer community to get help. And I feel like we need more services for our queer youth. For our Native American queer youth or even people of color, right? Because we have a high rate of suicide, one of the highest rates of suicide. We have the highest rates of being homeless and experiencing homelessness. And so I feel like our services should match what the numbers show. And that'd be more services for Native Americans, for people of color, and for people who are part of the queer, you know, community. So like I said, I was able to take advantage of some of the services and able to find recovery and find stability in my own life. But that took a lot of work. And I feel like, it took a while to get to where I am. That's all I got to say. I don't know exactly the testimony that you guys are looking for, but what I can say as far as like, since I work in the field full time, what I see is a lot more youth. I see a lot of youth coming in here, and they are dealing with being addicted to like fentanyl. And these are like 18, 19 year old kids coming into my office saying that their drug of choice is fentanyl. And that blows my mind. And I feel like we need to address that, and we need more youth services and prevention services to get them before they get to this point, before they arrive in my office, right? So we need to take this serious, because we're losing a whole generation to opioids. So so if we could address that, that'd be awesome. But I don't want to go over my time, and thank you for everybody being here, and thanks for asking me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for your testimony, and congratulations on 8 years today. We're so glad that you're with us. Next, we're going to hear from Janelle Freeman with Freedom from the Streets. Janelle, if you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Janelle Freeman Anderson, and I am the founder of Freedom from the Streets. I'm a founder of Freedom from the Streets and No More Streets. We are becoming a 501c3 pretty soon. We've been out here fighting. We've been out here since day one, since the Sheraton. We've been out here when nobody else was out here. Everybody was closed. I know that I got Native in me. I'm Black and Native. I got Native in me. And how I got thrown in the situation, because where a Native guy that I talked to that I know, he told me, he said, well, you got this group called Freedom from the Streets. Do some Freedom from the Streets at work. And so he was like, Sheraton really needs the work. He really needs the people of African-American out there helping, because we don't have that. We have a lot of people that is our person that is supposed to speak for African-American people. And they don't speak with us. They only speak with us when it's too late. And we was out there making a fool of ourselves. And he was like, you need to clean that up. So that's when I started getting into the Sheraton, started helping with the Sheraton, started helping putting down some rules. I've been homeless before. I've been homeless many a time. I had a fiance passed away. He jumped over here. Laurie, he jumped over the bridge on Laurie a year and a half ago, because we were about to be homeless again. So this work really got to me, where I've been homeless, and not only that, I lost housing because I let my own friends in, and when they come in, I lost my housing because, oh, there's too many people in your house, or somebody trying to take advantage of you, trying to say, oh, you got all this money, you can pay the rent, you know. So this homeless thing been really, really sticking with me, and I told myself I'm going to be out here with these people until the homeless ends, until somebody start listening to us. And I don't want to be homeless again and have to go back into this crazy stuff, because it is crazy. I got my own self out of homelessness. I sit on a micro board. I sit on all these boards, try to learn things and find things out about homelessness and stuff, because I already know. And then put my input in there, because I believe my input is very valuable to them, because I've been homeless. I am a person of color. So I believe that I am very valuable to it. And I've been in St. Paul, Minneapolis, working on, we do work in St. Paul. We do work in Minneapolis. They've been doing boat tours and camps over in St. Paul. We've been over there every day. It's stressing me out. It's stressing my person out that I'm working with. We stressed out. We got one person that is hurting right now. He can't work with us. Because all of this stuff, we've been out there 24/7, and we don't even really have any funding to be out here. We just out here because we care. We don't have any funding to do this stuff, but we just out here, and we're going to get our 501c3 pretty soon, and we're working on that. I'm on the Homes for All board. I'm on the Any Home Homelessness board. I'm doing everything I can, and then I'm working. I ran two camps, and it was perfect. The west side was perfect. And I ran the camp over northeast, and we was on the paper every week, because we was doing something. We worked with the community. We got knocking on doors and telling the community we're not, this is not what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do. We are people too. We need a place to live. Work with us. So East, I mean, Northeast worked with us. And then we're going to move into a shelter in Straw Tower, but it's taken so long to get in there. It's taken so long to get in there, but we're running this hotel with all these people in there. We are feeding them. We're clothing them. We are asking for donations. We're asking for food. We're doing all we can. And I believe I am doing the best I can because I am, you know, like I said, I'm a person of color and I am been homeless before. And I'm on, and then I do the little tiny houses. So I do that. So I'm in somewhere trying to get us somewhere to our voices to be heard. And I just wrote my book and I'm hoping that y'all will look at that book because that book is very special to me because the simple fact is I was tired of people saying that all these people do is do drugs and nothing else. And I was homeless. I didn't do drugs. You know, I was homeless. I had my kids taken away. I worked to get my kids in. I'm trying to rest for time. I'm trying to get in. So tell me when I'm done. But I am out here doing everything. I am out here in the papers everywhere. Not Pioneer Press, but Minneapolis paper, they say I'm in everything. Okay, is that it?
That's great, Ms. Freeman Anderson. Thank you so much for sharing, and thank you for all the work that you've done. It sounds like you're a busy lady. Yes. Great. Next, we're going to go to Freddie Turan or Turan. I apologize. I don't know how to pronounce your last name.
It's Turan.
Turan. Freddie, Mr. Turan, if you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you for being with us today.
My name is Frederick Turan, and I'm an Envision leader. I sit on the micro board. I have experience in homelessness for 11 years. I did work for HA, Homeless Against Homelessness. I did a lot of protests on the Capitol, voting ID. I became a part of this because someone was there to help me and guide me, and I wanted to get back to some of the people that was in the same position that I was. 11 years on drugs, crack cocaine. And so now I'm an Envision leader. So I would like to give a small testimony what Envision community is. Envision is a community, is a collaboration of 20 organizations working together to create a new type of housing for Minneapolis so that all people, including people with very low income, have what they need to live their healthier life. The Envision Community Collaborate includes homeless applicants, house providers, support and service agents, health specialists, and academy institutions, faith community, and other groups make Envision a reality. Envision also involve mixture, an international community, truly affordable housing. And so our ideal is to, what we're working on now is to try to give people housing over there on the 4100 block of Fremont. So we have a lot of community engagement and hoping that we get housing up by the next 2 months for people who experience homelessness. And we're doing a wonderful job. If you'd like to know more about our site, you can go on envisioncommunitymn.org, and you can see some of the things that we have, the work that we already done. Me, excluding Janelle, too. She's a part of it as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony today, Mr. Turan. I hope that we can hear more about Envision, which is a sort of cooperatively run tiny home community where there's a lot of kind of participation and ownership given to the residents who would all be formerly people who had experienced homelessness formerly. So we're going to hear more about that, and I appreciate you bringing it up and all of your work on that. Next, we're going to hear from Linda Soderstrom.
Good morning, Chair Gomez. Good morning. And committee members. Thank you so much for having us here today. My name is Linda Soderstrom, and some of you may know me. I lived at Crossroads at Penn in 2015, which was kind of a domino episode in our region where 2,350 people were notified on a single afternoon that they could no longer live where they were living. They could finish out their leases, but they had to reapply to live where they had been living, some for 10, 15, or 20 years. There was nowhere to go, and many times we heard people come to our meetings and say, I have nowhere to go, I have nothing to go there with, and I don't know what's going to happen to me, because there was nothing affordable at about $750 for a one-bedroom apartment. Those were 698 units, and they have not been replaced. You hear about maybe 10% of a new building with a tax increment financing being set aside for the deeply poor. That doesn't begin to add up to 700 units that needed replacement. I came here today to talk about the NOAA properties. NOAA stands for the Naturally Occurring Affordable Housing, like the Crossroads at Penn. NOAA is the older buildings who were built in the 50s or 60s and many times have fallen into somewhat of disrepair. They are easy to sell, and pardon my French, but they are easy to flip and they're highly lucrative. Crossroads at Penn was sold again after 96% of the original population were gone in 1 year. A $44 million profit was made in the third year after acquisition. We can do better than this. We need to preserve our NOAA properties, and I am a member of the Homes for All Coalition, who have a platform which involves tenant protections, preservation of the NOAA properties, and production of new housing. So it is very difficult to choose what to say to you today in a short while, but you know, we are all available to talk with you one-to-one, two-to-one, coffee clutches. I am on the board of Freedom from the Streets, No More Streets. I have now moved on to connect and learn from the National Coalition for the Homeless and the National Low-Income Housing Coalition, because in some ways, I need to let you know I've been studying this for 5 years, and though I'm not a geoeconomist or anything like that, I certainly have been homeless in my day. I have an arts background, and so, you know, back in the collective days and the communes and so forth, you know, I moved around a lot, and eventually I owned my own home and was a foster mom. I had a depression. I lost my home. Now I'm on a Section 8 voucher. When I was displaced at Crossroads, 24 months later, I was displaced again by the same opportunity. In a different complex, someone else came to upscale the property. That's not good enough. We can do better than this. So I will kind of pause with that for today, but if you have questions for any of us, or we can contact you further. As well, about the Crossroads story, there is a documentary that TPT made called Sold Out, and I believe that's in your papers for today. Thank you so kindly for having us, Representative Aisha Gomez. It's so nice to meet you. Thank you.
Wonderful to meet you too, Ms. Soderstrom. Thank you for joining us today and your testimony. Next up is Alexis Kramer. Ms. Kramer, if you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Good morning, all. Thank you for having me. My name is Alexis Kramer, and I'm with Freedom from the Streets. As you may see, I'm bald because that is the new trend. Women can be bald too. I consider myself a woman, so if you don't know, I'm a woman. I use she, her pronouns. And, you know, I like it. I feel free without hair. Hair can be too much sometimes, but no, let me get off with it. I've been homeless for almost a year in Hennepin County, and actually never got any help. I grew up in the foster care system twice. I am a woman of color, and I've actually became homeless because I have two children on my own that are African American, and I became homeless because Child Protection stepped in. And those of you who don't really know about Child Protection is they do a lot of, like, oh, how should I say this in a nice way? They do a lot of fraudulent stuff. Like, they want to blame the parents for everything, and I feel like They don't understand like what it's like to be a person of color, and they expect us to do it like the white culture way. And, you know, I honestly feel like we shouldn't be teaching our children that. We should be teaching our children about all cultures, understanding all cultures, all religions, you know, and all that stuff. And I feel like, you know, I didn't get the education I needed because I was in foster care, and I actually grew up with abuse and neglect. But because of that reason, that was another reason why child protection came in and took my children. And after that, I became homeless, never got any help. I kept getting denied for like being on general assistance because, you know, I was dealing with child protection. I'm being denied of employment because I got 4 pending charges on my background based on false allegations that I didn't do. And I can't even work. You know, I can't even do the things that I want to do because every time I turn around, everybody's looking at my criminal background. Oh, you got pending charges. So no, we're not going to hire you, or no, we're not going to let you get in housing. You know, it's really sad because I had to jump to Ramsey County just to get help. Ramsey County was the only county that had just opened their door for me and be like, you know what? We don't care what you have. We don't care what you're dealing with. Like, I'm in a child protection program right now, which is a group or a GRH program that I've been working with to help me fight against child protection. But it's just crazy. Like, there's not enough resources to help parents. Like, instead of like judging parents, we should have social workers that actually look parents up and say, hey, I understand, you know, for example, with mine, my child was hurt because I let too many people watch my children who I thought I could trust. And then they turned around and turned it on me saying I'm the abusive one. So it's things like that. Like, it's hard to trust a certain person to watch your kids. And that's my accountability. I apologize for letting other people watch my children. You know, I learned from that mistake. I would never let people watch my children again unless I actually known them for a long time, because anything can happen. Like, for the people that have housing right now, any day you could become homeless one day too. Things can happen. You can lose your job. You know, child protection can become involved with you. And it's just hard. And then aside from that, it messes up with your mental health. I have had mental health problems since I was 14. I actually wanted to commit suicide when I was 14. And after my children were removed from me, I wanted to commit suicide again. And I'm actually grateful that I didn't, because they are my motivation. They are my strength. And I am so grateful that, you know, I got hired from Janelle, because, you know, if I didn't have her or anybody else, I wouldn't know where I would have been. I probably would have been like in the hospital so many times, you know, in the psych ward, just going insane. But I'm grateful for this organization that, like, it actually helped me educate myself more on things, helped me educate myself on CPS and homelessness. And I'm just grateful for the work that I do. However, I feel like I do need to pull back a little bit, because I also am going to school to be a child protection attorney, and it's just all becoming too much. Like, it's all like falling down on me because I'm the only person doing everything. I feel like I'm the only person doing everything, but I know I'm not alone. But it's just, you know, I feel like I'm the only one doing everything 24/7. I would like to tell you guys more about child protection, to see how we can prevent people of color from losing their children, because I'm seeing it left and right. I'm getting so many emails from people saying that they are losing their children over stupid reasons that shouldn't even be a reason to have jurisdiction for people, for child protection to be taking the children. And I think that needs to be addressed. And so does, like, the disparities need to be addressed, because, as you know, after George Floyd happened, there are also police officers killing our men, black men, and that also needs to be addressed too. And also one more thing before I go, because I know I'm talking too much. The other thing is the encampments that are out in St. Paul and all that. I strongly think that the representatives and the senators need to get together and talk about homelessness, because it is an issue. It is an issue that needs to be addressed. And just because someone is homeless does not mean that they're not a human being. We are all human beings. We all make mistakes, you know, and at some point anyone can become homeless. But just put yourself in our shoes and see how it feels for us. There are some people that don't want to be in your shelters because we don't like how staff is treating us there. I've been in a shelter. I had no choice because I don't know how to survive outside in the cold. And I feel bad for the people that are outside right now because they refuse to go inside. And I understand, like, I'm not judging them on why they want to be outside. But the fact that the city and Ramsey County together is evicting these camps, that is just wrong. Where are these people supposed to go? That is the key word. Like, think about, like, okay, if people want to be outside, there's probably a reason why they want to be outside. But don't just stereotype them as drug abusers or, oh, they all are criminals or... No, they have feelings too, and they deserve to be treated with respect and dignity. And that's all I got to say. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Ms. Kramer, and for your testimony. I hope that you feel less alone when you hear all of the kind of testimony that we're hearing today. excuse me. Next up, sorry, we have... Kevin Forno, Mr. Forno, could you do me a favor? Could you state your name for the record and spell your last name just so we have it right and then proceed with your testimony?
Sure. Hi, my name is Kevin Formo. Last name is F-O-R-M-O. And I'm coming to you from Churches United for the Homeless, and we're located in Moorhead, Minnesota. So we're a little north of you guys, but... And anyways... Yeah, so I have personal experience with homelessness, obviously. About 7 years ago, I became homeless, and I went to the shelter where I currently work at now. So it's kind of different being on the other side of things now and seeing things, how they work from the inner workings, and so being on both sides of it. I guess up here we really struggle with homelessness. You know, you think up in, you know, West Central Minnesota, you know, it's probably not as big a deal as it is in the cities, but it is. We see it every day, and you know, we have people freezing in the streets. It's we don't have affordable housing up here. We don't have options. I mean, I struggled with that, finding, you know, services, and I struggled with addiction with alcohol. I've been sober for about a year now. And, you know, I got my life back together, but it took a lot of work on my part, which is really hard to do when you're struggling with addiction, trying to stop that, struggling with mental illness, trying to stop that. And then to have these services where they're, you know, some of them be like, okay, just go find an apartment, you know, and it's not that easy, you know, to just go out there. And then especially if you have a background, and I think that's a huge barrier that we're struggling with is this background. Places won't rent to you for the littlest. I had one DUI, and they were looking at that as oh, he must drink a lot or party, so we're not going to rent to him. You know, and throughout my drinking, I added more things to my record. No felonies, thankfully, but lots of other things. And it has been a complete struggle. I've had to rent from private landlords, and I had to talk to them, and I had to, you know, explain my story. And once I explained it, they completely understood. But when you go to these companies and you try to explain to them, it's just black and white. There is no gray area with these places. And that's a lot of people, unfortunately, that are homeless that I see struggle with addiction or some sort of mental illness in these shelters. And you just feel for them because you feel like there's no options. You know, there's not like just like one building, you know, where they can go. And, you know, we deserve to be out in the community too. People have pay their debt to society. It's time to move on, you know, and maybe some of them will mess up again, but a lot of us don't. You know, I haven't. I've done everything I could. I volunteer. I work at the shelter I used to live at. And I think the biggest thing is affordable housing for us, especially up here. Some kind of option. You know, I don't know what the answer would be, but I know that, you know, maybe being more lenient on the background. And maybe giving the time, giving that gray area where you can talk to the person, be like, you know, this happened or this happened, this is why, you know, and not just looking at records and what's on paper. You know, we're human beings. And yes, we made mistakes, but we shouldn't have to pay for it for the rest of our lives by not being able to find a place to live. You know, once we need that home base, we don't have a home base, it's hard to focus on anything else. We can't focus on our mental illness. We can't focus on staying sober, you know, which is an everyday struggle. Every single day, I have to devote a part of my time to staying sober, and I have to choose not to drink. You know, I have to do that every day. And without that home base, I can't do that. And, you know, I'm still struggling with, like I said, finding a place. I have a private landlord that worked with me, so I rent a room from a house. I don't have, like, my own area. And so I think if we're able to do that, work with landlords, you know, come up with some kind of thing. Like, I work with a place called Lakes and Prairie Community Action Partnership here in Moorhead, which is a great, great place. It helps not just with housing, but lots of things. And, you know, they were able to give me money, but again, that was it. So they're like, okay, here, we'll give you a voucher, but then you go find an apartment. You find transportation to go to these apartments. We don't have transportation, you know. We have a crappy bus system, you know, and it's like, well, do we Uber it places when we don't have money? Do we take taxis? Do we, you know, and a lot of times you end up walking. And, you know, in the middle of winter, it's just not feasible. It's not, you know, and then finally get there and then just be denied because of background. You could literally say, hey, look, I got a voucher, you know, I got the money that would be paid for it, but they won't let you in. So I think that's the biggest barrier. So if we could have, or even start building places that were lenient and, you know, in our area, we just don't have much of that. So that's all I want. Thank you for your time. Let me share.
Thank you for being here this morning, Mr. Formo. We really appreciate your testimony. Next, we're going to hear from Delicia McCain. Ms. McCain, if you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thanks so much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. My name is Delicia McCain. I work at Stepping Stone Emergency Housing here in Anoka. I became homeless when I was 13 years old. My mother and I became homeless. We kind of were misplaced for a good 7 to 8 years. We moved to San Diego where my older brothers were. And then we end up having to come back because my oldest brother passed away. So we came back to Minnesota. And we were still kind of misplaced moving from home to home. And then when I turned 21, we became actually homeless. We were living in my car in South Minneapolis. And I had my one-year-old daughter then, too, so we were all kind of living in my car. We did go to a shelter in South Minneapolis. I don't remember the name of it now. It's been so long ago. But it wasn't the right fit for us. We felt that we needed more help with how to start, you know, finding places to live or income resources, and they didn't have a lot of resources for us, so we kind of just made the point to start on our own and do it on our own. And then fast forward to a couple months later, in October of 2018, we found a place here in Coon Rapids, and we've been here ever since. In 2020, I got the job at Stepping Stone as a shelter advocate. And then in September of 2020, I became the life skills advocate at Stepping Stone. And I kind of helped with, getting the, residents kind of on track with, coming up with ways to, coming up with methods for everyday life as far as getting, you know, a curriculum down with chores, with, finding jobs and, you know, being able to live, I call it, on the outside life, outside of the shelter. In our shelter, I see a lot of struggle with mental health, and we don't have a lot of resources to help, you know, residents with mental health. We kind of just do as we can, and as advocates, we're not, equipped with resources, with a lot of resources for people with mental health and also drug problems. And so I feel that if we had more resources at, or people who work in the mental health industry or drug counselors inside of the shelter to kind of help them get on their feet and be able to work with everyday life would be beneficial for for the residents, and even also as advocates coming in to be able to have those resources to give before they can meet with a counselor or with a therapist or, you know, with anything that they need help with. I know when my issue is starting something as far as like, okay, where do I go to find information? How can I find information? Or if I find something and it's a loophole of finding other stuff, and it's just like, I just need something concrete to get me to where I need to be, or the person that I need to talk to kind of help lead me in the right way. But that's all I have. I thank you guys for allowing me to share a little bit of my stories. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Ms. McCain. We really appreciate it. Next up, we have Ariana Daniel or Danielle.
Yes.
If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me here today. My name is Ariana Daniel. I am the Director of Servants of Shelter, SOS, up in International Falls, Minnesota. I'm speaking today because I experienced homelessness twice in my life. I was left home at 15 and was homeless for 6 years, most of my teenagers, and homeless again with my two young children when I fled domestic violence about a decade later. When I was homeless as a teen, I mostly avoided shelters. At that time, most shelters did separate people based on gender. There were curfews, and there wasn't as much of a harm reduction approach taken as far as sobriety requirements were concerned, and, you know, not allowing pets. Those were things, services I absolutely avoided as a youth, and as a result, was in high-risk situations a lot. It definitely didn't help me work through my addiction issues and mental health issues that I was dealing with at the time, which has taken quite some time to work through. But services that I did really benefit from were drop-in centers. And the drop-in centers that were available then in the early and mid-90s were incredibly helpful and probably saved my life. They provided a safe place to use the phone, to do laundry, to just be out of the constant stimulation and action that was happening on the street that I was involved in. One of those drop-in centers, the Hedrick Martin Institute in New York, offered me my first opportunity to advocate for my peers, and I was a peer outreach worker in New York City during the height of the AIDS epidemic, and later became an HIV/AIDS counselor and worked in a mobile health unit counseling people when they got their diagnosis. That period of time has impacted me deeply, and definitely it's really hard today because there's a lot of echoes of the same types of denial of a public health crisis and seeing how devastating it is for large amounts of our population at the same time that it not receiving the same access to health care and treatment. So that's been a hard thing to see, you know, repeat in some ways, it feels like. Another youth outreach program that really helped me navigate the financial aid, and I received my GED and was able to attend a technical college and get a degree that really helped me work my way out, further out of poverty when I was a few years after that. And that helped me move, you know, into a decade of more housing stability and financial stability. the domestic violence centers that I was able to rely on when I did have to flee domestic violence also helped me create a safe place for my children to grow up in a home free of violence, which has led me to where I am today. And we operate an emergency shelter and a permanent supportive housing, an apartment-based emergency shelter in International Falls. We're the only homeless shelter within 100 miles in any direction. And it has greatly shaped both me and one of my staff, of where there's three of us. One of us, one of my fellow staff members also experienced homelessness and has experience with substance use. It really impacts our decision-making when we design our shelter to be based on dignity and privacy and security and a sanctuary for our folks. It has really helped us shape the way that our policies and our focus on harm reduction and on respecting the way that each family and individual wants to live their life. And so I just wanted to speak today about the services that did help me get to where I am and I think are essential for ending homelessness, as well as the ESP and ESG funding, especially the COVID relief that has helped us make it through the last year, and just again, let you know how absolutely essential those funding sources are, the ESP and the ESG, for providing flexible community-based responses to homelessness. And until we can, and we're all working hard towards to create more affordable housing in rural, remote communities like ours, it is really, really essential. We don't have a warming space. We don't have a 24-hour, there's not even a gas station where people can stay warm if they need to in the middle of the night. So really trying to keep our community safe. I can't speak to how many lives were potentially saved this year alone just by being able to prevent community spread of COVID and give people a safe, warm place to be and to protect both their physical and mental health. So thank you so much for having me today. It is really important that you hear the voices of everyone who've spoken, and deeply moved by hearing the stories of everyone before me. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Ms. Daniel. Next, we're going to hear from Kalik Rogers. Mr. Rogers, if you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, everybody. My name is Kalik Rogers, and once again, thank you for your time. I'll be brief. I was once homeless, moving from Chicago, Illinois, to Minneapolis initially with my family as a youth. We struggled to find housing after, you know, going from apartment to apartment, submitting applications where they take your money, but you're not, you know, they don't give you the opportunity to have a house there. So we wasted over $1,000. Over a couple months, we ran out of resources to stay in hotels, which led us into having to enter a shelter. But most of these shelters are not family shelters. They're women shelters and kids shelters, which separates the family and can cause a plethora of other issues, which have been listed previously by other testimonies. And for those reasons, like, that kind of encouraged me throughout the years. After we eventually found housing and got Section 8 and things of that nature, it made me have a fire in my heart to try to figure how I can help change the narrative on these situations. And so actively, over the last couple of years, working with Center for School Change, working with different coalitions, the MIACA Board, Youth Prize, I've been focusing on youth leadership and youth voice and how to uplift that within these issues of homelessness, and currently I'm working on research through Youth Prize on youth homelessness, and I've been doing surveys and uncovering their stories, because oftentimes, just like, this platform is a blessing because not everyone's able to tell their story, and that's one of the things we're looking to do, is to hear their actual pain points from youth perspective, and a lot of their issues kind of stem around, you know, they can't afford their housing. There's no job training, or they need supportive housing, of course, because a lot of these youth, and some of them I've surveyed, have been 15 years old who are homeless. And, you know, some of their issues could be their family got separated from being homeless, and they just had to figure their own situation out. Some of it is abuse. A lot of it can come from trauma that's caused through their lives that causes mental illnesses that haven't been screened. And that's a really big one. And some of my asks are just to encourage legislation to first, when funding comes around, to make youth housing and supportive housing a priority, and also to create or to work on those different programs that allow the youth to gain skills through their work or through supportive housing, or if they're learning skill sets such as building homes or helping building homes, to get paid for these services that also help them as well, like job training, things of that nature. And lastly would be to also more or less to create more obvious resources. A lot of these youth, some of them couldn't even fill out the surveys because, you know, through the lack of education and things of these nature. So just having that insight, reading like booklets and things of that nature that are obvious, like to help youth or to help in homelessness, is a barrier for them as well. So perhaps working on creating a Rosetta Stone, if you will, that can plainly lay out the details and where they need to go for specific issues. So thank you for your time once again. And once again, I'm Khalid Rogers. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Rogers, for your work and for your testimony this morning. We appreciate it. Next, we're gonna hear from Anita Reyes. I think she's just gonna need a second to get off mute. And Ms. Reyes, when you're done doing that, if you could introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony. Or maybe one of our staffers can take you off mute. I don't really know how the technical stuff works here.
The testimony I will give will be brief, because even a multitude of words cannot express the horrific impact upon those that experience homelessness. I did not become homeless as a result of an addiction or irresponsibility. It was a result of health issues. I grew up with a strong foundation. Stability and security was a must. My mother had told me that I was independent since the age of 5. Prior to losing my home of 18 years, I allowed many to share my home without any expectations of payment. They stayed long enough to get on their feet, and at no time did I even imagine that one day I would be homeless. To give a brief summary of how it was, I remember being cold and hungry for the first time in my life at the age of 52. I learned to walk one step at a time, unwilling to look forward in fear of seeing the obstacles in front of me. My experience has made me stronger and has given me compassion. When I see the ones without homes, I see their strength. Well, one must be strong to survive. I remember years ago in Minneapolis, on two separate occasions, my sister discovered the bodies of people who had died of exposure because they were homeless. Although today I'm now again a homeowner, I've lost my sense of security, knowing homelessness can happen to anyone at any time. The homeless are not invisible. Many have chosen to close their eyes in order to stay in their comfort zone. They base their success according to position, salary, and possessions versus success as one that is homeless. The simple basics, shelter, food, and facilities to maintain personal hygiene and laundry. The homeless are not a blemish on society. They are a result of a dysfunctional society. the greatest gift you can give a homeless person is their dignity and a smile. Do not think of those in need as a burden, but as a blessing, an opportunity to help. 36 years ago, I had a neighbor that was an activist for the homeless. The torch he carried was passed on to you. I ask you not to just carry that torch to pass on, but to take it to the finish line. I am in hopes that next year or the year after, that the homeless are not merely just a topic of discussion, but that we will see the result. Thank you for your time. And thanks to Sean Herring for organizing. Magwitch.
Thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Reyes. We really appreciate your testimony this morning. I think that's our our last testifier, unless there's anybody else who from the public who wishes to testify. Anyone? Okay, seeing none, I just want to thank everybody for joining us today. I wanted to say a couple things because, you know, I feel like in the testimony that we just heard, we really, a lot of ground was covered. And you know, we talked in our first meeting today, or meeting of this committee, about the kind of complication and nuance of this issue and the intersections of many, many different systems that, that impact people who are experiencing homelessness. And so just quickly, like what I heard today was talking was talk about the need for substance use disorder and mental health care and treatment, the issues related to physical health and trauma and the exacerbating impacts of COVID, the need for culturally competent care, the interactions with naturally occurring affordable housing, displacement, housing supply and affordability, and the need for permanent supportive housing for people who've experienced homelessness. We heard about the interactions with the foster care and child protection systems, the unique challenges facing LGBTQ and Two-Spirit Minnesotans, young people, domestic violence survivors, families, people in Greater Minnesota. We heard about racial disparities. We heard about challenges related to transportation and transit. The collateral consequences of interactions with the criminal justice system, whether that's in background checks that you have to go through to access housing, or you know any other number of challenges that come up, the need for jobs and job training and economic development, and the meaning that people get from having access to those basic opportunities, the challenges related to encampments and emergency shelter, and drop-in centers, including barriers related to substance use disorder, pets, keeping families together, lack of access to 24-hour safe spaces for people during the day. And we heard about the need for harm reduction and the impacts on educational outcome for our children in schools when there isn't access to safe and healthy housing. We're gonna go to questions in a moment, and I see Rep. Petersburg is gonna ask us something, but I guess the last thing that I wanted to say is that I also just heard so much hope and resiliency and insight and, you know, thoughtfulness and wisdom that you all shared with us today. And it's particularly meaningful to see how many people who have been impacted by homelessness and have directly experienced it themselves now are helping to serve the populations that they were formerly a part of. And this, like, you know, I think that when we have opportunities, whether or not we like hold the door open behind us and reach back and help pull other people up, really says a lot about who we are. And so I'm just really deeply grateful for all of the testimony that we've heard today. Thank you. Representative Petersburg has a question. And then if anybody else, you can use the raise hand function or text the CA. Rep. Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity. And first of all, I want to just thank all the testifiers for their courage in coming to us and talking about this issue that is impacting them almost all of them personally as well. But because we have you here, I think it may be helpful for us to glean more information from the testifiers if they have insights into various things. Some of the things that you talked about, Madam Chair, certainly are things that the legislature and others may be able to help with. But there are other things such as situations caused by decisions made by individuals itself early on in their lives. And so my question for any testifier that'd be willing to, if the situation were to occur to where you could go back to your early life or to even to our children in our school systems, what would you tell them about some of the decisions that you made and whether or not you would change something? And maybe there isn't anything, but I think it's helpful for us to know whatever we can do to help prevent the situation is certainly a lot easier to deal with than after the fact. And so if anybody has any comment, that's fine. And if you don't, that's also fine. I'm just curious because obviously the more prevention we can do, the easier it is to deal with. So thank you for your input and thank you for your coming here tonight.
Thank you so much, Rep. I don't know, Ms. Freeman Anderson, I see has her hand raised. I didn't know if you had a response to Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, I was responding back to him. The things that I would change is more people. I mean, it is some mental health out there, but the mental health that's out there, they treat you like you a baby. They talk to you like you a kid. You know, I need mental health, and I would change getting more mental health. And I think that the mental health needs to learn from us, too, because they don't talk to us right. And that make us not want to sign their papers or listen to them or whatever, because they're talking to us like we are a kid. This is what I feel like. They got to think, they know in their brain that this is what way we are. Just keep it in your brain, but talk to us like a grown person. And that's what they don't do. And that mental health is what I would change back, because mental health is a big issue that I've seen, like, the dude that was in Mall America that did that horrible thing, and he was in the shelters. So he was asking for help, but now he's in behind bars. That don't make no sense. When people are asking for help, please give them help.
Thank you, Ms. Freeman Anderson. Representative Petersburg, did you have any follow-up or anything else?
No, Madam Chair. I just wanted to give them an opportunity while we had them here to continue on, because it may be difficult to get them back. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Next, Representative Hollins had a question or comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you to everybody who testified today. That was really powerful. And a lot of your stories, resonated with the experiences that I've had and the people that I've met, in particular, Ms. Alexis with Child Protective Services coming in. I practiced family law before I was doing this, and I have seen this happen repeatedly. And I actually think this is a really important aspect of when we're talking about wraparound services and prevention of homelessness. I have seen too many times people who've had their children taken away for either minor infractions or for something they didn't even realize was an issue. And when you lose your kids and you don't feel like there's a chance for you to get them back, it is like a loss of hope. And so I really commend you for working on, going to law school and trying to do work in that area. It's we need good people like you who have that experience to do that kind of work. And I would just like to advocate that this entire committee consider the whole person, and not just the whole person, but the whole family, when we're talking about prevention of homelessness, because I think that that's just an incredibly important, aspect that often gets ignored. So less of a question and more of a comment. Sorry.
No need to apologize. Thank you so much for that, Representative Hollins. I appreciate it. Next, Representative Ryer.
Hello. Thank you, Madam Chair. Like others, I want to thank all of the presenters today. I will say that my heart is full from everything you've said, and my mind is well with ideas. And I just wanted to speak to one of my big takeaways is the structural nature of our society that brings people into the situations that you've all faced and that I've faced as well in my past, and have been a beneficiary of systems that helped lift me up so that I could overcome the challenges from domestic violence and other factors. If those had not been there, I would not be here. You know, I don't know what would have happened, and I hear all of that from you, but I also know that we're falling short in terms of education, in terms of mental health supports, in terms of an economic environment that allows all people to gain access to the benefits they need. It leads to choices that individuals make, but asking, in my view, you know, it's not the individual decisions that I would have necessarily redone in my life or that maybe you would. It's the structural pieces that led you to any of us to be there to make the choices we make. And we need to address the root causes to prevent these situations. And we need to reach out and make steps available for anyone who's in the situation because the root causes are still there. So I just want to offer my commitment to do anything I can to help advance us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Ryer. Next, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just kind of wanted to emphasize the point too that it's not necessarily choices, but circumstances. Listening to the testifiers, my family has dealt with addiction, heroin, alcohol. I have lost job. I've lost a job. When I was younger, we were living in an apartment, and I might have been a little bit of a bratty child, and threw a temper tantrum and was screaming and yelling, and neighbors called the cops. And, you know, the police showed up at our apartment and, you know, sat me down and asked me questions about abuse. I've had multiple medical problems, multiple surgeries, and at one point was without health insurance. When I was younger, my family was on food support, and there's mental health issues that stem throughout my family as well. So all of these things that that I've heard the testifiers talk about that led them to homelessness is something that my family's dealt with as well. But what's the difference between my family and so any of these things can really cause any one of us to go into homelessness. But, you know, just by pure luck or by circumstance or by the neighborhood I was born into or the color of my skin, these are the reasons that, you know, I have a roof over my head and other people might not. And so I think it's really important that we, you know, we do make choices, but sometimes there's a lot of things that are beyond our control. And, you know, we need to really think about that and remember that, you know, we're all people and we want to be as helpful as possible. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Representative Cagle. I just see that one of our testifiers, before we go on to Rep. New Brindley and Vice Chair Keeler, Ms. Soderstrom, did you have something you wanted to say in response to Rep. Cagle? Or?
Yes, thank you so much. To everyone, no one chooses which zip code they're born into, and poor people aren't poor because they've made poor choices. We need to look at the fact that there's a quantum leap needed for new beginnings and fresh starts. And we're not offering that bridge to the future. We're not even building it, let alone crossing it. And so I just wanted to respond that I don't take offense in saying that people have made choices in their early life, But I do think that we all need to knit this together so the common good and the social contract are revised so that housing is an entitlement and that a universal voucher. Several years ago, Dr. Desmond told us that homeowners have a subsidy of $20 billion a year and renters only need a subsidy of $11 billion a year to be universally vouchered. So we need to relook at who is benefiting from a homelessness industry. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Soderstrom. And quickly to Ms. Freeman Anderson, if you had a brief response that you wanted to.
I just wanted to say something when she was talking about how people could be homeless. And, you know, another thing is that us American African, people of color do not even call themselves people of color or people of African American anymore. We call ourselves Black Americans people. That's what a lot of us call each other. But now I'm just saying we don't have a strong person for us of color. We had the president of whoever he was, the president, but some people of color don't respect him because they thought he was going to get in there and be himself. And people feel like he was reading off of a paper or whatever. We need people that is a color to help us too. And we don't need the boss to be, I'm sorry to say this, but we don't need a boss to be a person of Native American, Caucasian person to be the boss of an African-American person teaching an African-American something about our history or something about us, because then we get to looking at things totally differently. And we have this behavior where we do not stand still. We use our hands a lot. And then when we use our hands a lot, some of that makes the Caucasian kind feel that threatened or whatever. So it's kind of stuff like that. Like we need to learn our history. We need this history to come together, and we need to come together quiet and good, not people yelling at each other or saying whatever. We need it to come. We really need it to come together, because us American Black people are sitting around talking about this stuff the same as y'all talking about it. We are talking about it and trying to figure out how can we come together. But we can't come together because the simple fact that we can't get no schools. We don't got no hands or nothing. Everything is the corner store is from people that's not in this country. No black, no American Black person is owning no corner store. No Black person is owning no schools or nothing else. So it comes from a lot of that. It's like how to be us, how to be a African American person, how to be us. We can't be us because you won't let us be us. Because what we are, you is scared of, you know, and we don't want you to get scared of us. This is how we are. And like, I don't like reading off of papers to tell people things, because I like to talk with my heart. And sometimes when I talk with my heart, I'm talking loud or talking, you know, shaky or whatever. And then people start looking at you. It's crazy. That's the way I love to talk. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Freeman Anderson. Next, Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to all the testifiers. I know that both things can be true. Sometimes it can be really difficult to come before a group like this and share your story, and sometimes it can be kind of cathartic and is nice to be able to share your story. So whatever it is for you, thank you for being here and sharing that. I'm really interested, you know, I had a great conversation with Chair Gomez, and we talked about some different things and some different goals. And one thing that I brought up is, you know, everyone is in a different place and everyone has different needs. And some of those needs as a legislature, we will be able to fulfill, and we should be able to help make progress. And there are other ways in which it would be very difficult as a legislature to make meaningful change. You know, for example, one of the testifiers talked about the homeless encampments, and there are some people
who want that reality right now and who are choosing that. And perhaps it's not practical for us to force a solution there. But there are clearly a ton of you who are working on solutions with people are in a place who are in a place who are ready to do something different and make a change and want that. And I'm particularly interested, I'm hoping, looks like Mr. Rogers is still on the Zoom. I would love to hear more from you about your work with youth. Chair Gomez and I talked about that, you know, it feels like we need to figure out our priorities and where our communities and populations and people where we can have a big impact. And obviously, you know, we've brought up, I mean, this is the Preventing Homelessness Committee. And as much as we can work with youth and young people and families to help change that trajectory, I think that's a really good use of our time. And I would love to hear a little bit more about what you are doing in that realm with youth specifically.
Thank you so much, Representative New Brindley. Mr. Rogers, did you want to address the representative's question point briefly?
Yeah, sure thing. Thank you once again for the platform. I mean, the focus of the work is to, and it's kind of answering your previous question as well, is to look at the whole ecosystem. It's not just housing, but it's education and the employment factor of it too, that those three kind of encompass. Oh, and not to forget health. That's a really big important part of it. And just some of the work that I've been doing over the last year or so, a lot of it is centered around youth advocacy and also youth leadership, having us, I guess I'm a part of that too, right? to have a platform to speak and not just to be heard, but to follow up and to be a part of the leadership board, for example, because those perspectives are often not utilized and or they're not necessarily, how would I put it? They need to be shown as if they're important, and to show that it's important is to have them in those spaces permanently, have a position that allows that, have a space for youth to be a part of that. Rather, it's just one, but that's a start. Some of the work that I've been doing, I've been the only youth voice there, but that change the narrative for them to see that this is a valuable position to have and to have individuals of my demographic and my likeness in those spaces.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Mr. Rogers, it sounds like if you're, if you're willing, that we might want to have you back in the committee or to help us kind of to dig deeper on some of these issues that are specifically impacting young people, because we know that, you know, as the representative just said, like, if we can get, you know, when we can get to them, then we can really kind of move this upstream. So really appreciate all your work and we'll stay in touch. Okay. And next is Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have a question for Mr. Rogers as well. But I wanted to thank you, Madam Chair, and thank everybody. I just want to echo what my colleague said about the importance of your stories and your work and your courage in coming before us. And I think it's going to really help guide our conversations as we move forward. And Mr. Rogers, I appreciate your work. And again, you're restating what so many people have said, you know, how this issue connects to so many others. And particularly when you were talking about employment, I was wondering what challenges that you and others have faced in transportation and transit. You know, I was at a hearing a few years back where someone said, I'll always remember this. What good is a job if you can't get there? And so I'm kind of wondering if, what challenges you faced in that area. And myself and Representative Cagle are in the transportation arena here in the legislature, and any thoughts or advice you would have for us?
Absolutely. Well, to have transportation, first there would be a need to have money to access it. And that's often a barrier for people to have, you know, bus cards or bus tokens and things of that nature. But when it comes to me personally, I was a biker honestly. Like, I've made a way out of no way, but, you know, for some people, like, there's this barriers of if you, the only places they're hiring could be factory jobs, which could be in Shakopee somewhere. How does a person, a lot of those are not accessible by bus. So, like, having supportive programs that work with those individuals. I know there's, temp services and things of that nature, but if a person is involved into those services and would like to just have a job outside of that, it's hard to, you know, use those first couple of checks to get yourself footing in a foundation to actually be sustainable, to keep the job. Because I've had friends who've gotten the job, but it just didn't work out based off of transportation. So just allocating funds to help that process as well.
Good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Are there any other members or members of the community who have questions or comments? Seeing none, next week we're going to hear a little bit more about the kind of the sort of finances of the homelessness response in Minnesota and kind of like what the state contributes to it. We're also going to be hearing from the Department of Corrections and some other folks about kind of going a little bit deeper on the collateral consequences of being part of the criminal justice system and how that interacts with housing and homelessness. And if there's nothing else for the good of the order, then we are adjourned.